This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
House Judiciary will now come to order. Mr. Berry, please call the roll.
Here.
Bartel.
Bartel here.
Schwach.
Here.
Odenbach.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Pischke.
Here.
Poirier. Rehfeldt.
Here.
Reimer.
Here.
Soy.
Excuse.
St. John.
Here.
Stevens.
Here.
And Chairman Hansen.
Here.
Mr. Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Berry. We have a quorum. We do have meeting minutes from our last meeting to approve. The chair will entertain a motion to approve the minutes of our last House Judiciary Committee meeting.
So moved.
Moved by Representative Pischke. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Representative Aylward. Is there any discussion on your motion, Representative Pischke?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did look them over last night, and they looked perfect.
Good man.
So just letting everyone know the Secretary is doing a great job.
Thank you. I agree. All right. With that, all those in favor of approval of the minutes will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Minutes are so approved. Welcome, everybody, to House Judiciary this morning. We have four bills on our agenda, but two of them are going to be deferred until Wednesday of next week. Those two are 1066 and 1060. House Bill 1066 and House Bill 1060 will be deferred to Wednesday of next week. Is there anybody here from out of town that wanted to testify on either of those bills? Okay, perfect. Just a few reminders before we begin. Please silence your electronic devices. If you wish to testify, you're welcome to do so, but please do sign in at the podium. In the back, please remember that all questions and comments should flow through the chair. And if you have any handouts, you're welcome to have them distributed through our pages that we have here this morning. And pages, if you would, come up and introduce yourself, tell us your name, where you go to school, and what your plans are for after graduation.
Hi, I'm Catherine Rausch. I'm a senior at Holvin High School, and I plan to go to SDSU for agriculture education next year.
Awesome.
My name is Ashlyn Utter. I go to Douglas High School in Rapid City. And next year, I'm hoping to go to University of Arizona for criminal justice.
Great. Thank you both very much for being here. I appreciate it. Okay, we are going to begin this morning with House Bill 1041. House Bill 1041, an act to facilitate legislative oversight of settlement agreements involving a state entity or official. The committee will now hear proponent testimony on House Bill 1041. Good morning, Representative Otten.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and House Judiciary. Well, a few years back, I think it was about four, the legislature passed and got signed into law on a nondisclosure. It was a pretty straightforward bill in itself, agreed with many of the proponents, and I took in at that time the opponent testimony to it, and I took it to heart. So when I wrote this one here, this takes that part of it to heart. This is actually under non-disparagement agreement. The courts have been very clear over the years that that relationship between employer and employee needs to be held in, I guess, sanctity of that. And so I started thinking about that, and what way then, when could we hold the sanctity of that, of bringing a disparagement in front of an actual committee? Well, that's, we have two committees that can go into executive session. So that is how that is written, so that if in case we did have something and need to look into some things, we can actually check that out and still maintain that privacy of employee-employer relationship. But for myself, I get a little nervous when settlements are made, and they're made by, I don't want to be disparaging, but the last lack of a word that I've got would be then a bureaucrat in itself, and not having elected officials to have oversight on it. And this here will provide that oversight that I think is necessary. So with that, I will bid you adieu, and if you need any questions answered.
Thank you, Representative. Further proponents in House Bill 1041. Any further proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents to House Bill 1041? Any opponents? Seeing no opponents, we'll open to questions from the committee. Are there any committee questions? Representative Odenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for the sponsor. Thank you, Representative. I'm just curious, so when you talk about the oversight that in this bill the executive board will have, I'm just reading through this here. So the settlement agreement under your bill gets transferred to the e-board. What exactly do they do then if they don't like it?
Representative Otten.
As I see it, as you bring it in with the discussions and are made at that point in time, then the executive board could actually then take the matter into court itself, or we could make the changes that we feel is necessary. So,
follow up, Representative Odenbach.
Just one follow up. So your thought on this is that the executive board, it has to be transferred over there within 30 days of the execution date. There's a bit of this. Left unsaid is, I guess, what I'm saying. I'm not sure I'm clear when that gets transferred over there within 30 days, just what exactly the e-board could do with it without maybe it being further specified in the statutes. You know, if you go through in the executive branch and you negotiate for a long time a settlement with somebody and you finally reach that settlement, It can make it hard to settle a case if you know that whatever you quote-unquote settled then gets transferred to a third party and it's not clear just what actions they can take. So I'm just wondering about that piece of it.
Representative Otten.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I get that end of it. The exec board has its actual powers is quite broad and inclusive in itself. I would find that as a fact-finding mission at that point in time. There's things that, you know, we deal with that we've gone into executive session for, and the matter is just principally dropped. But As I look at it and see it, that it's just something that needs to come by before an exec board or GOAC in itself, where people can get to find out what in the world was going on.
Further questions from the committee? Representative Stevens.
Thank you. Well, would this piece of legislation give the executive board the authority to void any settlement? I mean, I'm just thinking the AG came into our, you know, our group of judiciary, and we're talking about millions of dollars there. Would that give the executive board to say, well, no, we don't want to enter into that type of a settlement, or could that impact the governor doing entering some kind of a settlement? I guess I'm kind of curious about that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Otten.
Thank you for the question. As I read it and actually wanted it drafted, it was not to overturn anything in itself and start that kind of a fight. It was actually to get information back to elected officials to see if we are doing what we're supposed to be doing. I just don't think that it is fitting that a bureaucrat, they settle into something and the legislature in itself is kept out of the loop. So.
Follow up.
So do you envision this piece of legislation as being more of a disclosure type of legislation, or is this some kind of, I guess, going back to, again, you know, could you void out an agreement? The executive board said, well, no, we're not going to agree to that. I guess that, to me, is kind of the critical question.
Representative Otten.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It has never been my intent to backdrag anything and over litigate it. So to that end, I would think that the exec board has that authority to take something into court. But on most of these agreements, what we'd be looking at is the who, what, why, and where. I mean, making sure that all those T's and I's have been dotted properly. I don't foresee us going, no, I don't like that settlement, we'll give you this here, because I think that is beyond its purview.
Further questions from the committee? Any further committee questions? Seeing none, thank you, Representative. We'll move to committee discussion or action on House Bill 1041. Discussion or action? Representative Stevens.
I move to pass.
Is there a second? Motion made by Representative Stevens, seconded by Representative Rehfeldt, that House Bill 1041 move to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Comments on your motion, Representative Stevens?
Well, I think with the explanation that this isn't intended for the executive board to be the ultimate negotiator in this matter, because certainly with, I can think of just of the AG opiate thing that we talked about yesterday. I mean, it's, I heard it's like 300 pages long. You know, I think that would be well beyond the executive board's expertise to even be involved in that. I could see a lot of other type of things, but if it's a matter of oversight where they have that information available to them, I wouldn't have objections to that. And if that's what the purpose is, then I'm okay with that.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Odenbach.
I think I would concur with Representative Stevens after considering this balance of powers issues here. You know, not only in light of recent news, as we all know, but I think over the years, I think this could potentially be helpful. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion on the motion? And I agree. I mean, to me, this looks like a good transparency measure within the branches. I don't see that it modifies any authority of the E-Board. So I don't think it's giving the E-Board any authority to rescind any of these agreements, to modify anything. Is simply just so that they can see these agreements that are being made, so that if oversight is necessary in the future, that oversight can be accomplished. On Section 2, when it comes to non-disparagement agreements, I do remember when the prohibition on non-disclosure agreements was passed, and I think that was a good bill. I don't think that the government should be hiding settlement agreements from its citizens, and a non-disparagement clause has a similar effect. It's not the same effect, but it's a similar effect in that if you're a litigant and you're under a non-disparagement agreement and say you were paid a settlement amount, anything that you say publicly risks violating the non-disparagement agreement and thereby risks forfeiture of the settlement amount. So it has a chilling effect on speech by including non-disparagement agreements in these government settlements. So I'm going to support the bill as well. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then the motion before the committee is to send House Bill 1041 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. All those in favor of that motion will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Madam Secretary, please call the roll. Mr. Berry, please call the roll.
Representative Aylward.
Aye.
Bartel.
Aye.
Schwach.
Aye.
Odenbach.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Pischke.
Aye.
Rehfeldt.
Aye.
Reimer.
Aye.
St. John.
Aye.
Stevens.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Mr. Chair, we have 11 yeas and 2 non-voting absent.
Thank you, Mr. Berry. That motion carries. House Bill 1041 will go to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any objection to consent? Seeing none, the Chair will certify House Bill 1041 for the consent calendar. Thank you, Representative. We will move in our agenda to House Bill 1069. House Bill 1069, an act to include out-of-state convictions as a basis of an enhanced penalty for certain drug crimes. The Committee on Judiciary will hear proponent testimony on House Bill 1069. Good morning, Representative Perry.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Chairman Hansen and the Judiciary Committee, I am House Prime. My name is Representative Carl Perry, and I'm in District 3. And this is HB 1069, which is an act to include out-of-state convictions as a basis of enhanced penalty for certain drug crimes. This is a constituent bill, and fortunately, the constituents are on. And the important thing here is Do multi-state convictions affect a sentence? Merge or a combination of convictions makes sense for the safety and the needs of our judicial and our citizens. We're not looking for double punishment. We're looking for the best way to address convictions. And I have a little quote here. When people can get away with crimes just because they are wealthy or they have the right connections, so the scales are tipped against the fairness and equity. Inclusion of our out-of-state convictions will balance the scale and give tools to the courts. I ask your support of HB 1069, and I will stand by for questions, and we do have other proponents coming up.
Thank you, Representative, very much. Further proponents in House Bill 1069. Mr. Thompson, good morning.
Yes,
please,
Chair.
Introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Ernest Thompson. I am the Brown County State's Attorney. And the basis for this, as 22-42-2 is written, a second conviction for distribution of a controlled substance carries with it a 10-year mandatory minimum. However, as it's written now, that does not include out-of-state convictions for distribution of drugs. When Representative Perry mentions fairness, that's the first point I want to talk about, is how it is now we're actually punishing South Dakota residents harder for their second or subsequent conviction of distribution of a controlled substance, drugs, than we would if an out-of-state resident comes into South Dakota and sells drugs. They're going to be treated less harshly than our own citizens. So the first point is the fairness issue of our own citizens versus out-of-state. The second point is that this is targeted. It is not adding a new punishment, not adding another class. It is just including out-of-state convictions in the mandatory minimums that are already in the statute. I say this is targeted because we are looking at people bringing controlled substances, drugs, into South Dakota. In Brown County, I'll only speak about Brown County, but we're not dealing with a lot of methamphetamine labs. It's imported, and it's imported from out of state. Obviously, cocaine and heroin that we're also dealing with has to come from out of state. When we have people trafficking drugs from out of state into South Dakota, if they have a prior conviction for doing the same thing, they should at least be punished as harshly as a South Dakota resident. And finally, this is consistent with efforts to focus on the distribution of drugs rather than the addiction. The second or subsequent conviction indicates by itself that we're dealing with a occupation rather than an addiction issue. Those are the main points I wanted to make, if anybody has any questions.
Thank you, sir. Please do stand by for the question period later on in the hearing. Further proponents on House Bill 1069. Good morning, Mr. Bichon.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Paul Bichon, I'm here on behalf of the State's Attorneys Association. We support this bill. Let me just hit a couple points that we've not mentioned yet. Think of this in the context of DUIs. A number of years ago, we passed a bill that said, hey, if you are convicted of a similar offense in another state for a DUI, we get to use that for counting purposes for DUIs committed in South Dakota. What this bill really does is exactly the same thing. If you've been convicted in another state of a distribution that fits under what we have here in South Dakota, you can use that conviction as the second or subsequent offense. And so that's what it does in this case. It is very similar to what we do with DUIs, and the State's Attorney's Association would urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Further proponents in House Bill 1069. Any further proponents? Seeing no further proponents, are there any opponents to House Bill 1069? Any opponents? Seeing no opponents, we'll open to questions from the committee. Representative Stevens.
Thank you. Mr. Thompson, could you please tell me, go a little bit into why the exception on the last sentence of this language here when it's dealing with conspiracy. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
It's, as far as it not applying to co-conspirators in the distribution, basically, the conspiracy statute in for distribution of drugs has any co-conspirator being held to the same punishment. Let me start over. Already in 22.3-8, typical conspiracy is punished one class lower than what they're charged with. What 22-42-2.4 does is eliminate that exception of 22-3-8. But really, when we're saying it's still charged as a class 4 felony, even though it's a conspiracy, whereas the conspiracy statute of 22-3-8 would have it one class lower. So when it says it doesn't apply to this, it's basically saying it's still going to be punished as the class 4 felony, rather than using the one step down from 22-3-8. That was probably as clear as mud.
Well, I would say, Mr. Thompson, your prior employer would not be proud of you. Can I have a follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Stevens.
Mr. Bashan, could you maybe clear the mud a little bit?
Sure. We'll be at ease for just a moment.
Because I think I understand what the good representative is trying to get at, and perhaps it should that be in there or not, if I'm tracking Representative
yes.
Stevens. Because it appears it may opt out things that shouldn't be opted out.
Correct.
Because in South Dakota for drug cases, the conspiracy to commit a drug offense, unlike the normal statute that says if you have a conspiracy to commit theft as opposed to a class 4 felony for the amount, it's a class 5 felony. So a conspiracy generally is one level less than the actual offense. For drug cases, it doesn't apply. And so
that's what I'm asking.
Yeah. If I could look quick, I think you're likely right that shouldn't be in there because, I know. Oh, no one writes that down. Representative Stevens, would you mind giving me the...
Here, you want to use like mine on here? I've got this up here.
I'm pulled. I just can't remember what's... Is it...
2242.2.4.
That's what I thought.
Do you do habitual offenders on conspiracies?
I think you can. It's a felony.
Quit doing it.
That's right. That's the idea.
Mr. Chair, if
Mr.
I may.
Bashan, yeah, please.
And it gets a little complicated how you look at it wording. If I look at it, and maybe we need some guidance from others, but if I look at it, when you say this does not apply to 2242.2.4, you're opting out what would be a conspiracy offense in another state, and that should be included for accounting purposes. So I understand, Representative Stevens, what you're getting. I think you're right. I don't know if that was Mr. Thompson's desire. Knowing him, I doubt it. Have I answered your question, sir?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd say, I mean, I clearly understand Mr. Thompson's position. Everybody needs to be treated the same, whether you're in state or out of state. And it seemed to me that that provision did just the opposite of what he's trying to accomplish. I mean, I don't have any problem with the rest of it, but I think that last sentence should be deleted.
I would tend to agree, sir, but I don't want to take away from Mr. Thompson or the prime on it either.
Thank you, Mr. Bichon.
Thank you.
Could I ask, Mr. Thompson, you okay with that?
Yes, I am.
Okay, thank you. Further questions from the committee? Representative Poirier, good morning.
Chair, question for anyone who could answer it, I guess. I'm just curious why the 15 years, that's all. Why not 20, why not 10, why not 7? I'm just curious about the 15 years, that's all.
Mr. Chair, may I answer that question?
Mr. Thompson, yes, please.
The 15-year period came about to be consistent with our habitual offender statute under Chapter 22-7 for habitual offender enhancement. We look back 15 years. This is consistent with, they like the DUI statute, which has a 10-year look back. But the starting point for distribution is a Class 4 felony. By the time you're up to a Class 4 on a DUI, it's your fifth offense. Your second offense of a Class 4 level at the DUI is a 25-year look back. So in comparing the 25-year look back, if we made it consistent with the DUI statute, or the 15-year look back, making it consistent with the habitual offender statute, we chose to go with the habitual offender statute because it's more analogous to a habitual offender than it would be DUI multiple offenders. So we chose the 15-year look back, basically mirroring the habitual offender statute.
Thank you, sir. Further questions from the committee? Follow-up, Representative Poirier? Further committee questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Odenbach.
Well, I don't know if this is a question for the sponsor or maybe another lawyer on this, but I'm still unclear why the last sentence is in this proposed amendment. It sounds to me like it's a harmless thing, that the intent here is to make everyone be treated just like they did these crimes in South Dakota, even if they did them in Colorado or whatever. And so I'm just wondering if maybe Representative Perry or one of the sponsors can answer conclusively for me what the purpose of that last sentence is. Was there a problem with jurisdictional issues in other states and trying to go and reach into them for conspiracy, or can anyone clear that up?
Representative Perry, welcome back.
Mr. Chair, actually, all the tough questions go to Ernest and go to Paul. All right. And this is a tough question also, but I do have an answer, and that's why I wanted to share it. And that is, we go to a group called LRC here, Legislative Research Council, and they determined that this was a good idea. And so we have a choice. We follow their guidance or we don't. And if we take that sentence off, I think that the Ernest and Paul have both said that would be fine. So the answer is that's why it's there. And if it came off, no one would object. Does that help you, Representative Odenbach?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Odenbach.
Yeah, I think it helps. I'm guessing were I to sit down for a half hour with LRC, they may have a reason why they threw that in there, and I'm hopeful that it is not fatal to the operation of this statute if we just remove it. If we think as a committee that it's not, then I think the intent of the bill is good. So,
thank you. Further committee questions? Okay, seeing no further committee questions, we'll move to committee discussion or action on House Bill 1069. Representative Stevens.
Yes, I'd make a motion that we strike the last sentence of the underlying proportion of this bill.
Second.
Motion made by Representative Stevens, seconded by Representative Odenbach to strike on page 2, lines 16 and 17. The sentence, this does not apply to section 22-42-2.4 and the period. Discussion on your motion, Representative Stevens.
Well, I think it's contrary to the intent of what this bill is wanting to do. And I mean, it's certainly, I certainly agree with the fact that whether you're in South Dakota or you've got convicted in Nebraska, it should be treated the same. And that's consistent with our DUI laws where you, you know, if somebody gets convicted in DUI in Nebraska, it's counted against them in South Dakota. So I think this is appropriate to take that off.
Thank you, sir. Further discussion on the motion to amend. Seeing none, then the motion before the committee is to amend House Bill 1069 by striking on page 2, lines 16 and 17, the sentence, this does not apply to section 22-42-2.4. All those in favor of that motion will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carries. Bill is so amended. We are now on House Bill 1069 as amended. Discussion or action. Representative Schwach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm still shaking off the cobwebs from last session. I'm just trying to recall, do we need a prison impact statement before we can take action on this bill?
LRC has not flagged it as requiring a prison impact statement. Okay. They would normally do so if they felt like it was required. Good question. Further discussion on House Bill 1069 as amended. Representative Barthel.
I'd move do pass as amended.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made by Representative Barthel, seconded by Representative Odenbach, to send House Bill 1069 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Comments on your motion, Representative Barthel.
Well, first, I'd like to commend Representative Perry for bringing this forward. Actually, I brought a similar bill a couple of years ago that dealt with the assault statutes, and I believe our chair may have had one also in the past, but makes me wonder how many other laws are out there where there's similar conflicts. But just because you commit a crime in another state, you shouldn't get a pass when you come here, as opposed to our citizens who might have an enhanced penalty because they live here. So it certainly makes sense, and it's a good deterrent to stay out of our state if you're going to deal drugs.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Odenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I would echo that and just say I appreciated what he said, that this is a focus on those who are involved in distribution rather than, you know, addiction. And, you know, I kind of go back to the bill the other day about the tracking devices. I think that's a good pattern if we're going to live up to the spirit of meth we're on it and say that, you know, these are the types of things where interstate people are moving around and we're wanting to make it tough to do that business in South Dakota. So I'd urge your support.
Thank you, sir. Further discussion on the do pass motion. Seeing none, then the motion before the committee is to send House Bill 1069 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. All those in favor of that motion will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Mr. Berry, please call the roll.
Representative Elward.
Aye.
Barthel.
Aye.
Schwach.
Aye.
Odenbach.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Pischke.
Aye.
Poirier.
Aye.
Rehfeld. Rehfeld's excused. Reimer.
Aye.
Soy is excused. St. John.
Aye.
Stevens.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Mr. Chair, all present votes are yea.
Thank you, Mr. Berry. That motion carries. House Bill 1069, as amended, will go to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Any objection to consent? Seeing none, the chair will certify House Bill 1069 for the consent calendar. And that, folks, concludes our agenda for the day, except for Representative Odenbach has something for the
procedural
committee.
Yes. Sorry, I have a question on the previous bill that we put on consent. Is it proper if I object to that at this time so it is not on the consent calendar?
Yeah, absolutely.
I do so.
Absolutely.
Thank you,
yep.
Mr. Chair.
The bill will be placed on the debate calendar. Thank you. Further discussion? Representative Barthel.
Well, then that makes me think a little bit on this one as well. Perhaps we should have a conversation with LRC and see why there was, why that last line was in there, and if there's a good reason for it, we could amend it on the floor. Just saying.
Sure. Well, anybody can object to the bill being placed on the consent calendar at any time, whether it happens here or before it's heard on the floor. So if you object to any bill being placed that we've heard today on consent, I will decertify them all for consent. Would we like
Let's
to
Let's stay with it. If he finds out different, then we can pull it later.
So, okay.
Yeah.
So to be clear, Representative Odenbach, you were referring to House Bill. Which do you object to being placed on consent?
The prior bill, the first one we passed today.
The Representative Otten bill?
Correct.
Okay, that's House Bill. I have it scratched off. 1041. House Bill 1041. Okay. So we'll let him know. Yeah. So House Bill 1041 will not be placed on the consent calendar. House Bill 1069 will be placed on the consent calendar. Any objection? Okay. All right. With that, the chair will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Moved by Representative Pischke.
Second.
Seconded by Representative Aylward. All those in favor of adjournment will signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. We are adjourned.